Today I want to talk about denial. Nope, I'm not talking about the river in Egypt. I'm talking about the word denial. As I was reading a newspaper article by a black author of the reactions that he received attacking him as a person, as a professor, as an American from white people, I thought about denial. Lots of people, when questioned about being racist or sexist, will go into a full denial. I have a black friend, so that proves I'm not a racist. I work with women, have a mother, sisters, a wife, daughters. That's evidence that I'm not a sexist. No, and no, it isn't. What having a black friend proves is you have a black friend. What having these females in your life proves is that you have these females in your life. Denial is a rejective force field meant to protect our identities from threats of being less than perfect, less than decent, less than honest, less than honorable. If we admitted the truth to ourselves, we fear we will be less than others. Maybe if we tell ourselves the truth about ourselves, we will be more in our own eyes, not more than others. Maybe telling the truth is about being more of us and not being more than others. It's very clear to me that I aspire to a higher consciousness. It's also true that I find myself thinking and feeling racist and sexist thoughts and emotions. I am a white man who has been and is privileged. My viewpoints come from places of whiteness, privilege, and maleness. Women and men have not shrunk back from me when I enter an elevator after them. Store owners and store clerks don't go into high alert when I walk into their stores. The hands of police officers don't unconsciously move toward their guns when I approach them or they approach me. Like you, I see the world and everything in it through my consciousness. That consciousness filters what I see, what I like, what I don't like, what I don't understand, and what things may be threats to my sense of self, to my body, to my property, to my safety. In Christ's Returns reveals startling truth. Activity, bonding, rejection are described as the forces that we must understand in life, and we must rise above the bonding, rejection impulses of the ego. Otherwise, we will take what we want, or at least try to, and push away physically or mentally or emotionally by denial that which we don't want and that which we will not accept. Another problem with denial is that it requires a lot of energy to push away what we don't like, don't accept, and won't confront. We can get locked into an intractable situation that becomes unextractable for us. Maybe that's why discussing politics or religion is such a volatile proposition, and we're encouraged, don't talk about those two subjects at a cocktail party. The reality of life shows that we will have many, many energy exchange experiences in our lives, millions and millions. Denial is an act of blocking the energy exchange experience to avoid it. By doing this, we negate the value that we could be getting from that energy exchange experience. If we don't discover the value, we will not be learning. If we are not learning from our experiences, we are literally choosing to make ourselves dumb or dumber. Those are not good choices. The law of cause and effect, in so many words, says that whatever we do, we are also doing to ourselves. If we deny, we are denying ourselves. We literally and figuratively will be reducing our own physical and energetic presence. It's easy to misunderstand how an energy exchange experience is interpreted as denial. As very young children, we will want things, and we don't understand why we are not given those things. We feel that we are being denied when we don't get everything we want. Later in life, we may realize that we are creators, expressors, manifestors. We are having experiences that give us access to energy that we can process for our own growth, nutrition and nourishment and nurturing, for our healing and repair, for our protection, etc. Denial is an attempt to wall off the scary item. At the same time, that attempt walls us off. This undesirable condition is analogous to the body creating a tumor or a cyst to seal off an unprocessable energy pattern. So at some time in the future, with a greater awareness, the body can dissolve the energetic contents of that tumor. Medically speaking, it's possible that biopsies of a tumor's contents spread disease. Because the consciousness of the body wasn't quite ready to dissolve the problem, medical interventionists spread the problem through the body. The doctors involved blame the disease for metastasizing, and not themselves for ignorantly spreading it. Doctors are in denial about the dangers of their practices, much the same way as pharmaceutical industry is about their drugs and the side effects that they cause. Both groups would deny their primary motive is profits, but their actions tell a different story. One of the first focuses we face in our quest to be alive is resistance. Even before we are conceived, the sperm faces resistance as it moves toward the ovum. Every day we deal with gravitational force. If we are moving deliberately in the same direction as the gravity is pushing or pulling us, that movement requires less effort. If we're going in a direction that is different than the gravitational direction, we have to deal with that influence. We can call it resistance, or we can call it inertia. The human birth process has been called labor, meaning the mother has to work hard to move the baby out of her body. Resistance during labor and in the rest of life's activities can be interpreted as denial. Unknowingly, an interpretation could be, "Why are you resisting me? Don't you want me? Am I being denied by you?" You already know that people, infants, youngsters, teenagers, and adults, all get angry or depressed when their wants and needs are resisted, when they are denied. We want what we want, when we want it, and some of us quit and give up, and others of us won't be denied. Let's go back to the time of conception. Many pregnancies are unintended. Some of those are unwanted. Denial incurs in this process, just as it does in Kubler-Ross's interpretation and descriptions of the grief process for people dealing with the death of a loved one. We deny that what took place actually took place. Right now, denial is playing on the national political scene in the United States with Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, sexual abusers galore such as Harvey Weinstein and others, all denying what they did and what everybody says they did and believes they did, and they deny that they did it. There's an aggressive concept connected to denial. It's called DARVO. DARVO. It's when somebody is accused of a crime such as sexual abuse and denies it. Denial is the D in DARVO. The next step is aggression, and that is to attack the accuser, to try to intimidate them into recanting the accusation. And you saw Stormy Daniels do that a couple of times. I didn't have sex with him because she was intimidated by Michael Cohen and maybe the threats that he made directly or indirectly. Then there is the RVO. That's when the accuser reverses the order and claims they are the victim of a malicious act by the original accuser. Donald Trump claims he is a victim of all those women who have come forward about his behaviors toward them. They are liars. They're attackers. I'm the victim to their malicious attacks. Darbo. Standard practice. Over the years, I've dealt with many female clients. Some of them had symptoms of a condition that I labeled want deficiency. The symptoms included anger, frustration, depression, despair, and more. They wanted, but they didn't allow themselves to either express their wanting or to take steps to manifest what they wanted. For a variety of not good reasons, they denied their natural yearnings, but their bodies and their minds, behind the scene, started to show the ill effects of that denial. For the children, now as adults, who heard the parental angst of, money doesn't grow on trees, the self-protective instinct would have been interpreted as, do not ask for what you want, because you will be attacked. Those situations were unfortunate. A more aware parent could have chosen to explain calmly and rationally the concepts of income, expenses, budgeting, and so on to the child to raise their awareness. They didn't need to attack the child. What probably happened to provoke those yells that the parents felt threatened for not being able to provide for their children, and the threat was the child's innocent enough request. Connecting wanting to pain is more of a female interpretation in my experience. Males are more often takers, robbers, predators than females, while females may be more apt to manipulate to get their way. But there is another thing that tends to be female-oriented, and it's called ordering short. It was explained to me by a woman who did couples work in California. Women order short, she said. When women want X, what they will do is dial back. They will choose, I'll take half X. I don't need that much. I used to see it with my mother, with her family, and there were a lot of us. She would say, oh, I really, really liked the meat on the turkey neck. Meat on the turkey neck? All, you know, 1/2 ounce of that? That's because the turkey legs and the breasts and the thighs went to other members of the family. My mother ordered short. I had an example of this again the other night and gave me an opportunity to explain this concept of ordering short to Catherine. We had gone for a long walk, and during that walk, Catherine talked about her feet hurting. As I've done in the past, I've offered, when we return to home, to sit on a couch and massage her feet. I used to do it for Marianne, and I've done it for Catherine. And she declined. And I knew what was happening is she was processing my offer. Well, I don't want to impose on Tom. My feet will get better all by themselves. I don't need it. I have a pedicure scheduled for 3 days from now, and so on. Women order short. The next morning, when I explained this concept to her, I said, let me explain what I think happened. Your ordering short denied me an opportunity to give to you, to care for you, to be kind to you, to be considerate of you. You didn't allow me to have those good feelings, and you didn't allow yourself to have those good feelings. So now, explain to me how good it was to decline my offer. Tell me the value of that. And of course, she couldn't do that. Denial takes on another insidious form, denial of self, and denial of capital S self. consider that some people have the strong impulse to, I want to see if I can do this. I think that's a good thing. For those people, the challenges give them the opportunities to push themselves mentally, emotionally, and physically, and at the same time, to be able to draw in the physical, energetic resources to support them as they discover if they can do that. Deniers, on the other hand, when faced with challenges, problems, obstacles, resistances, and so on, immediately deny their strengths and resources. I can't. It's too hard. I don't have enough time. I can't afford it. I don't want to. Are examples of a person denying him or herself and the connections that are always available to them. I read an article about women enduring the very harsh weather conditions during the recent Boston Marathon, and women quitting less frequently than men. The article's author, a woman and a marathoner, wondered why this was so. Was it the experience of giving birth that made women stronger and tougher than men? I wondered if women were more accustomed to denial, and female marathoners have already proven that they refuse to be denied by something as impersonal as the weather. As mentioned, denial can be the basis for building strength in the person, or the basis of the destruction of a person's will to express, and even the will to live. In the Boston Marathon, as well as in the routine events in daily life, how we think about our capabilities, our will, our purpose, are what influence enduring and keeping on, or quitting. In other words, continuing or quitting is the result of our thinking. Failure can be interpreted as a denial of success, as in, success was denied to me. One of the all-time great stories of failed attempts was reported to be Thomas Edison's attitude to his thousands of unsuccessful attempts to invent an incandescent light bulb. I didn't fail 9,000 times. I discovered 9,000 ways not to make a light bulb. When one door closes, another door opens is a standard positive thinking statement. If a person were to get stuck focusing on the locked door, the closed door, as denial, anger or apathy would be the result. If the locked door were interpreted as, there's a better, more effective direction for my efforts, I'm going to look for those. An open-minded, excited person could seek to discover that new way. And that's what inventors, explorers, creators, and other successful people do when they encounter obstacles. We recently had a house guest from Germany. This young man was pretty impressive. Sometime after he left, I tried to describe him to myself. I wanted a single short statement for this description. What came to me was this: Patrick is successfully fortunate. Successfully fortunate. Interesting phrase. He, according to my observations in conversations with him, is that he was successfully fortunate. It dawned on me that maybe all of us should have this goal, to be successfully fortunate. Focusing our attention on that goal would attune our mindset and attitude to examples of our good fortune. Those examples are plentiful, but we may tend to overlook them. When we start focusing on them, guess what we draw into our lives more and more? Yes, good fortune. The successfully fortunate person may turn away, deny, the thoughts, feelings, words, and actions that vibrate with misfortune, but denial would not be a way of life. Causing and creating through the expression of energy would be the commitment of the successfully fortunate. Recognizing good fortunate, the good end results, and all the progress on the path to that end result would be interpreted that way. Ooh, I learned something good. Oh, I learned where the door is not when I walked into the wall. I have heard this expression. If I didn't have any bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. Those people, some of them clients, allowed themselves to be victims to the imagined boogeyman, bad luck. If we think bad luck is knocking at the front door, instinctively we will try to hold the door shut. We may try to deny the entry of bad luck into our lives. Either that, or we will run from whatever opening they think bad luck will use to enter the lives, including work, relationships, earning money, self-expression, striving for what they want, and so on. Bad luck doesn't exist. Electromagnetic vibrations exist. The electromagnetic nature of consciousness exists. When we want to be, do, or have something, we can work to become electromagnetically aligned with that something. When something undesirable comes into our lives, it is not the fault of bad luck. It's due to our electromagnetic alignment with what we don't want. The awareness that we attract through our attention and intention should be pretty obvious to most people. Others think by focusing on what they don't want has advantages. When bad stuff happens, it won't come as a shock. They won't be caught off guard, is the thinking. What these people believe is that they have a good defensive strategy, but in truth, they are setting the stage for self-attack. They draw to themselves that which they don't want, don't like, and that which they are afraid of. Through all of this, warriors, the fearful, deny divine support. Other than denying the self, denying the divine's care for your well-being is the most damaging. With these two denials, of self and of the divine, we are essentially denying the flow of life to us and through us. That is not the way to be happy, healthy, effective, loving, and loved. It is not the way to be successfully fortunate. Listen to this prayer, then ask yourself why you or anybody else would want to deny this promise. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.